This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 18th of May 2010, and today I'm joined on the line by Charlie Skelton, a writer, journalist, and humorist who has written for The Evening Standard and The Guardian, as well as numerous television programs in the UK. Last year, he covered the Bilderberg Conference in Voulamini, Greece for The Guardian, and this year, he is organizing the Bilderberg Fringe Festival for interested parties to come and shine the light of publicity on the closed-door meeting of the world's power elite. Charlie Skelton, thank you very much for joining me on the program once again today.
Lovely to speak to you.
Well, Charlie, we did talk several months ago about your experience discovering Bilderberg during the 2009 conference in Greece, but yes. For those out there who didn't catch it, can you just recount a bit about your travels and travails in Greece and how you came to be covering it for The Guardian, one of the largest newspapers in Europe?
Well, yes, briefly. I went out there not really knowing even whether the conference was going on there, because last time I had the idea and I thought, oh, this sounds an interesting thing, sounds fun maybe, and I found a reference to on an obscure web forum, this is possibly the hotel where it's going to be, that kind of thing. So I turned up in Greece, in this seaside town, really honestly not knowing whether or not the conference was going to be there. And then, you know, the next minute, fleets of limousines arrived, helicopters started swirling, and machine guns appeared everywhere. And I sort of went, oh, right, yes, this seems like the right place. And there were a few bloggers there. There was a couple of, I guess you'd call them fringe media people. But what was odd is that I was the only representative from, I think, what you call the mainstream media at all. And it's me with a little handheld digital camera, and which is very poignant, really, and slightly terrifying to think that was the sole telescope being pointed towards this extraordinary event, was my little digital camera. So yes, it all started from there, and it turned into a strange dystopian nightmare with me being chased around hillsides and harried, and eventually being arrested so many times that I ended up leaving the seaside town after only about sort of 2 days there, when the conference was still on. And then the nightmare took me to Athens, where I was chased around Athens. I mean, all of this is on I wrote about this on The Guardian. It's the Bilderberg files. It's on, if you look on The Guardian website, and you'll see all the madness that took place. But it turned into my own little version of the parallax view, and me jumping into cabs saying, take me to the embassy, that sort of thing. And really, hopefully, this year, and also wrestling in the Athens underground with a plainclothes policeman, although I didn't know he was a policeman at the time. So anyway, a whole series of bizarre things took place, really as a result of the extraordinary paranoia surrounding this meeting. And hopefully this year, there's going to be a lot less nastiness and a lot more just fun and games, I really hope. So that's the plan.
Well, I really hope so, too. And if there is less nastiness, it will be probably because of some of the coverage that you were able to do last time. Excuse me. And I believe that if you Google Bilderberg 2009, your Bilderberg files will still be one of the top results. So you've earned a certain infamy, I guess, and will go down forever as one of the people who cracked the nut in 2009. But now it's 2000.
You say forever. Forever, until they close down the internet.
Exactly. Well, who knows? Maybe that's on the agenda this time. So what is the plan for Bilderberg 2010, and what's going on in Spain?
Well, it's interesting you say that we'll be organizing the Fringe Festival, and, you know, part of what we were trying to do is have a little bit of a gathering there. We didn't really know what was going on, but we found out the other day that the Spanish, I suppose you call them, are organising a much larger set of events, and the whole itinerary, a big agenda of gatherings beside the hotel. There's going to be meditations and parties and beach parties and discussion groups. And so we suddenly realised we weren't organising this at all. We're just going to slot happily into a much larger event, you know. And so, yes, I think we're going there. We're going to take some photographs. I think the idea, someone mentioned to me the other day that the Quakers used to bear witness to wars by sort of standing on a hill and sort of looking at them and saying, well, you know, this terrible thing's going on, and here I am bearing witness. And I think there's an element of that. So at a distance from any nastiness, I hope. And hopefully there really won't. I really hope there won't be. It all seems very positive, a positive feel to the whole thing at the moment, you know. Sort of, I think it'll be more people juggling and hooping on the beach and having discussions in the evening about, you know, the direction our world is taking and that kind of thing. Hopefully not all the discussions will be in Spanish so that I can take part, but yeah, I think it should be fun.
Well, certainly it is a positive sign that that there are already people who are organizing this type of thing. So what can you tell us about who or what group is organizing this fringe festival that you're going to be joining up with?
Well, I know looking at the agenda, I know that there's an organization called the Zeitgeist Movement of Spain. I mean, presumably part of the larger Zeitgeist movement, which you've probably seen the movies and all of that kind of thing. But they're going to be doing what they call a photographic safari on the first day of the festival, where I think they're going to see where they can take photographs of any delegates arriving, see if they can get through the tinted windows and what have you. But so Zeitgeist are going to be doing something, and there's various other. I think, you know, the Spanish anarchists, which sounds fun, I think they'll be turning up in some numbers. Hopefully in not being too anarchic. But there's going to be all sorts of different things. And we're going to be based at the, if anyone wants to come along, we're going to be based at the El Garofa campsite, which is just a little campsite at the foot of the hill where the gated hotel, the Bilderberg Hotel, is, which is the Hotel Dolce Sitges. But we're going to be at this El Garofa campsite at the bottom, hopefully just sort of having some fun and having some Bilderbergers. I sort of set an agenda for myself last year in the last piece, in which I said we'd be there and we would have a Bilderbergers on a barbecue. So I've rather forced my own hand there. So we've just on eBay buying a barbecue as we speak.
Well, half the people that you talk to about the Bilderbergers believe that it is some type of hamburger. So I guess that's a fitting tribute. Well, it is great to see that people are taking this initiative, and I certainly do hope that there isn't any of the shenanigans and things that you experienced last time. But it's one thing to hope that that's not the case, and another thing for it to be the case. And we know that there is a long history of Bilderberg minions harassing people at the borders and really giving people a hard time when they try to enter the country even. So are you concerned about this? What do you think? Do you have any strategies for this? Is there anything any advice that you'd like to give people who are thinking about going to Spain or anything on this issue?
Well, my main strategy is to be polite, be extremely courteous, and no matter what pressure is placed upon at any time, and I this goes for anyone turning up, is to be absolutely open and polite, even if you're being arrested. Because I remember I was arrested so many times, it was a joke last year. I mean, it was a very bad joke, a nasty joke. But I remember one point I lost my temper once in a police station, and I used a curse word. And the moment I did, I'd given away everything that I had, every sort of moral advantage, and they became extremely aggressive at that point with me. And so I learned a lesson right there, is never do anything, raise my voice. So we're going to dress, I know this sounds slightly ridiculous, but we're going to dress smartly and be polite. And I think that's going to be my number one strategy, is just sort of be nice. And also be aware, I think, that the police, the local police in the area, are going to be under the most enormous pressure. And I witnessed this pressure last time in Greece, where you could tell that the chief of police there had never seen anything like it. He looked like a man at the end of his tether, because you can imagine the amount of pressure that's on him and on the local police generally. So, you know, I'm reasonably sympathetic towards them. Because, you know, this is going to be the biggest day of their career in so many ways, you know, in terms of the job they have to perform, the biggest week. So, I'm going to be sympathetic towards them, and hopefully they'll be sympathetic towards me. You know, fingers crossed.
That's right, and I think that's absolutely the right attitude to have, because certainly, in the bigger scheme of things, these people are just on your side. They're not the owners of big banks or titans of industry or anything. They're equally in it as much as any of us are. So, whether they know it or not, and exactly, we have to get these people on our side. And I think people who are looking for a good example of that, certainly the way that We Are Change Ireland and the Sovereign Independent and other groups in Ireland managed to talk to a policeman outside of the Trilateral Commission meeting earlier this month in Dublin, Ireland, is another example of how police officers are not enemies or should not be treated as enemies. These are people who are on our side and can be convinced of what's going on just as much as anyone else. So I think that's a good strategy.
This is an absolutely critical point, that if a distance builds up between the populace and the police, that's the worst possible world that could happen. And withdrawing this distance and getting close and talking and being, you know, and making that relationship human and normal is so important. And in fact, it was last year, I believe, that the Evening Standard. There was a big campaign because a couple of the policemen, I can't remember the particular event, concealed their numbers on their shoulders, you know, their identification numbers, and there was a massive protest, and rightly, because the moment you have an unidentifiable policeman there, standing between you and the building, or you and a protest, whatever, you and a protest, then it's a whole different ball game, and you know, it's. That's one of the battles we have to fight, is to keep numbers on the shoulders of our policemen. At least that's the case in the UK. Certainly in Greece, when the riot police came in, it was like seeing it was imperial stormtroopers, and everyone that looked identical. And you know, that's a terrifying fact, the militarization of the police. You know, we have to fight that with the humanization. And it's so that anyway, I'm rambling, but it's a very, very important.
Exactly, and I think you make that point very well. We have to fight the militarization and the zombification of the police into some sort of homogenous fighting force and rehumanize them and get them back on the side of the people where they belong, and to which they really are already to a certain extent. We just have to make sure not to draw battle lines where none need to be drawn. And absolutely, I think that's a good strategy. And I think the other side of that equation is that there are strength in numbers, and the more people who are there, obviously the better things will go for those people who are there. So if people who are interested in getting involved in this and in joining you, where should they go for more information?
Well, they could look up, if they've got a Facebook account, they can look on Facebook, and I think we're called something like Bilderberg 2010, a Spanish idyll. That's our Facebook group. Or they could email us at, I think it's bilderberg2010@yahoo.co.uk. But yeah, there's all sorts of groups that are organising and going. And the best thing to do would be to look in your bank account, see if you can afford a flight to Barcelona and have a week in the sunshine and see what the Spanish have got in store for us. Hopefully, it's something nice. Certainly, my wife is taking a hula hoop, so she's going to be hula hooping on the beach. So I look forward to seeing that at least.
Well, what a nice idea. I think that's a much better idea than meeting behind closed doors and trying to set an agenda for the world for the next year. And I'd rather see people hula hooping on the beach any day. Certainly, I would be there in a heartbeat if I could, but I cannot. So I certainly hope other people will be able to get there and hopefully be able to create that environment that we're looking for of camaraderie and sharing just a real human experience with other people. And that's I think the best thing that we can do in these circumstances. And who knows what will come out of this year's conference and the way it will play out. But if we don't get involved, then it will not turn out in the way that we want it. So certainly my hat's off to you for what you're doing. How about any other projects or anything else you're working on right now?
Well, I've been I was working on the script editing Channel 4's, the UK Channel 4's alternative election night that we've just had our election. So that was fun. It was a 4.5-hour live event, and it was very interesting to be there and be in the midst of things, to see our political system sort of shaking itself up and coming down into a shape that we don't even quite understand yet. Yes, I've been doing a bit of that, and then hopefully in the winter I'll be heading off to pick olives in Portugal. So, you know, a bit of work, a bit of play.
That's right. So what do you think about the way the election turned out?
I honestly don't. I don't know. I have no idea. We'll see. I mean, I found that I was slightly worried by, because this is the first time the UK had presidential-style TV debates, you're probably aware, and we had these three debates in which Nick Clegg and David Cameron and Gordon Brown stood behind these podiums and vaguely had some sort of semblance of a debate. But what was slightly worrying is that the whole election campaign then became focused really on the personalities of these individuals, which is sad, I have to say, for Gordon Brown in that case, not having a personality. But it was not necessarily a step in the right direction. I mean, it's great that we could have this exposure for a political debate, but it should be a broader thing, and it should be about not just about personalities, but about substance. And I would have loved to have seen different members of the cabinet and shadow cabinet debating these things. We did have a chancellor's debate, but quite frankly, no one watched that. It was far too boring. But so anyway, it was a very different campaign this year in Britain, and it very much remains to be seen what on earth is going to happen here. But all we get now is that the message is that the belts are tightening, and public services are being cut. That much I know. But apart from that, I'm afraid it's all very much, let's suck it and see.
Right. Well, it is quite a change from what you've known in the past. And speaking as a Canadian, it seems to me that the British system is following the something that transpired in Canadian politics very closely over the last several years, where we had a very popular leader of a left wing government who was succeeded by his finance minister, who quickly lost control and lost control of the government to a coalition, a minority led by the Conservative right wing party. And it seems very oddly similar in a lot of ways, and unfortunately, if it plays out the way it does in Canada, it does not look like a doesn't look like a happy few years for you.
Okay.
As I lose my voice.
Good.
Anyway,
well, in that case, I'm taking the first plane to Portugal then.
Oh, there you
go. Actually, maybe that's not the best country to go to right now, but yeah, we'll see.
Well, I certainly hope that works out for you, and I'm very much looking forward to Bilderberg 2010. And of course, any info that you manage to get, please let us know and keep in touch. And I assume that you will not be writing for The Guardian this time, or it will be appearing in The Guardian.
Yeah, we are. Yes, I am. Yes, I'm writing for them again. So that's great. So that's hopefully you'll be able to read about it on the Guardian website. So yeah, you can check into the Guardian website from I reckon the 2nd of June, and the reports should start coming through.
That is great. I'm ecstatic to hear that, actually, because I'm surprised they did it in the first place, and I'm even more surprised they're doing it in the second place.
Well, good.
Yeah, and that was not a slight against your writing. that was more of a pronouncement on the press in general. But I'm just very glad that one of the largest newspapers in the world is going to be covering this yet again.
Well, great. It is good news, yes. So, yeah, hopefully I'll get a chance to write those reports and we'll be languishing in a Spanish jail somewhere.
Excellent. Well, certainly we all hope and pray, and we're looking forward to this great new conference, the Fringe Festival. And I certainly hope people will be out to join you. Well, Charlie Skelton, thank you so much for joining me again today, and best of luck in Spain.
Well, thank you very much.